All right, are we back?
As back as we're going to get.
Yep, we never left.
Never leave. Live in the monkey room.
We still haven't posted any pictures of the monkey room.
We have not. It is a abject disaster right now.
Well, with a name like the monkey room, people want to know. I mean, I've seen the monkey room.
Yeah.
But to most people, that is a mystery. Is it a mystery better left unsolved? I don't know.
I think let their imaginations fill in the blanks.
Okay. Okay. Maybe that's the way it should be. Maybe that'll be episode 200 or something. That'll be a big monkey room reveal of some sort.
We got 500.
500. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say even 200 by the time we get there. No one's going to remember we said it.
Right.
Except Alistair. He'll remember.
Mark.
Yes, Mark will remember too. All right. So it's an evening recording, so you know what that means. Did that even come across the microphone? Because I opened it.
Yeah.
It was a growler. It was not a can. That was the problem.
it sounded like a kind of a one of those silent but deadly farts.
Yes, that's exactly what it sounded like. And that might be how the beer tastes. I'm not sure yet.
Oh, ooh.
But yeah, I didn't expect any sound at all. I thought that was just going to be nothing. Because again, opening a growler over the microphone doesn't.
Must be. If it tastes like a fart, it must be full of Citra.
I do not believe this is this is not a Citra one. No farts that I can tell. Okay, let's see here. What are we doing? What's the word I'm looking for? What's the word I always use? Housekeeping. So we want to thank Chelsea for joining us from Skybound Hops in Nebraska.
Hello, Chelsea.
Thank you for joining us, Chelsea. And she sent me a very nice note saying they've learned a lot from listening to our podcast. So I'm assuming that she's talking about our podcast and she didn't join us by accident.
It's like, wait a minute, this isn't the furniture refinishing podcast?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Yeah, when someone says, great job, or I've learned a lot from you, I kind of look behind me and go, who are you talking to? So, Chelsea, thrilled to have you. Thanks for joining us. Tell all your friends, tell all your enemies. You know my spiel. So that is it for housekeeping. What shall we talk about today? Today, I think you wanted to talk about bitter hop components, I believe.
I do. Mm-hmm. We spent so much time talking about the aroma side of hops and very little. It's like bittering is a foregone conclusion. Like, oh yeah, hops are bitter, and we all know it's alpha acids. But what you don't know could fill a warehouse.
and let's be honest, when we talk about, I mean, if you're looking for two bitter old men, you came to the right place.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. I've been studying bitter all day today. just to make sure I was all brushed up on all the bitter goodness that we can talk about.
Excellent.
The bitter components, how they work in brewing, where they come from in the hops, how they're perceived in your face hole, all that good kind of stuff.
Do you think our listeners want to hear that, or should we do our review of Black Widow for everyone instead?
Oh.
Because I know you guys, we went, I know you guys went, and we haven't talked since then.
Yeah, no, we have not talked since then.
Or we could talk about bittering. I think we've got some people going, uh-oh, where are they going with this?
And some people are like, I'll be good with either, I guess.
Probably.
Let's stick with the bittering stuff for today.
Okay. I guess.
Yeah. They'll have to, we'll carry the Black Widow over into a backyard brew farm and follow us on that channel if you want to hear more Marvel chat.
Wouldn't that be great if that was just a smokescreen and it was all Marvel chat once you signed up for it? No brewing talk whatsoever. Complete smokescreen.
And by great, if you mean pissed off, probably.
That would
be very great.
I think the folks from Patreon would flag us as something, because how come people keep signing up and canceling and signing up and canceling?
Right. It's all right, man. As long as we get two new $5 followers a week and they drop out, who cares, right? we're going through for the volume.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're going to talk about bitter hop components today.
Okay.
And not just alpha acids, but the acids, quote, acid complex. And what they are, where they come from, and all that good kind of stuff. But this topic arose because I was reading, as I usually do, early. I don't sleep anymore. So it's like 4:30 and I'm like, oh, let's pull up my news feed, see what's in there. And like Google gives you just the regular Google news feed as it's building its algorithm for, based on stuff that you click on and you, in its news feed. It's pretty much two things. It's beer stuff and Marvel movies. That's all it is. So that's where I find all those, you know, strange links that I'm always sending you at the wee hours. But
yes, I was reading plenty of them.
Yes, I was reading one weeks ago, and it just, the stuff they were saying was just making me mad, because it was like three brewers who got together and said, oh, we heard all of this stuff about Cohumulone being, you know, really bitter, and there's a difference between high Cohumulone and low Cohumulone hops, blah, blah, blah. And so they put together this, quote, experiment. You can't see my air quotes, but they're very bold. And their, quote, sensory panel. And got all this data together, and lo and behold, they're like, oh yeah, absolutely. The panelists agreed that high Cohumulone levels were perceived as a more harsh bitterness. And I'm just like, what? No. Based on the other data that we saw from the American Society of Brewing Chemists, there is no difference between Cohumulone and Adhumulone and Humulone. So I said, it's just making me aggravated. And I think that was after our whole series on the scientific method.
And I was just going to say, we've talked about the scientific method. Have we ever talked about experimental design? I think we talked about in one of the sensory episodes what good experimental design looked like in that particular paper.
I don't think we talked about from like doing field research, we talked about how to lay out plots and whatnot. We didn't get into the, you know, degrees of freedom for statistical validity, any of that kind of boring stuff.
That's making me warm inside.
Yeah. So that's just the beer.
It might be.
The bottled farts.
Yes, it's not farts. It's good. It's good beer.
Yep. Lactosey farts.
No.
So it just got my gears grinding, and I'm like, that's it. We're doing an episode on bittering components, because damn it, and evidence and citations and actual good stuff. So I started pulling this list together, and then I realized this is going to be like a mini symposium. This is too much stuff. because I had pages and pages and pages of notes and links and research studies, and it was just too much, right? So I'm like, maybe I ought to write a review paper on how this concept of Cohumulone being a harsh bitter is a ton of bullshit. And I'm too lazy for that. But anyway, so I have all this great information, and I'm like, I was going down this road. I'm like, can I rant for an hour on how this whole Cohumulone myth is exactly that? It's a myth. I'm like, yeah, I could, but should I? That's a whole nother question. Probably not. But it got me thinking after. So I had this cooking in my mind, right? And then we did our whole sensory episodes, and I'm like, maybe it should be more about bittering components because it's more than just Humulone and Cohumulone and Adhumulone and all those other various Humulones and Lupulones. There's other stuff in there that contribute to bitterness, and how we perceive those components physiologically are different, but also they affect our perception of the beer's, quote, bitterness.
Yep.
And so I said, well, let's just talk at a high level then about these bittering components. What's in there and what happens to them in the brewing process. And hopefully it scratches an itch for those hop growers out there that want to know more about the brewing chemistry, and maybe they can add some value to their sales when they're talking to their brewer customers about, you know, which hops to use or maybe addition timings and things like that. Mm-hmm. There, that's how I got to where we're at, what we're going to talk about today.
So you kind of talked yourself out of a rant and decided to go down a more scientific path.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Right.
I don't know, all in favor of just letting him rant. I mean,
I was...
Everyone's raising their hands in their cars right now.
While lying in bed thinking about this and reading these bullshit articles, I think I pulled something. I was getting so aggravated. So I'm like, I can't. Yes. So I'll save all that for the Siebel students.
Oh, my.
Right. So anyway, let's talk about bittering components. And let's start off with the ones we know the most, alpha and beta acids, because, you know, that's what hops are all about, right? Well, at least up until about 20 years ago, that's all anybody cared about was alpha levels.
Sure.
And to some extent, beta. But we could have a whole nother episode, maybe we should later, about the differences between alpha and beta and what that means and how they're measured and blah, 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 which is probably not a bad idea. I'll put that on the list. But today, we just want to talk at a high level. So you have these, they're called acids, because technically they lose protons, H+, hydrogens, ions. That makes them acidic. They're not like hydrochloric acid. They're organic acids. Mm-hmm. The alpha acid isomerizes. So basically what that means is you add some energy to this complex molecule, and it forces it to change shape. But it doesn't really lose any of its components. It doesn't become something else. So all the carbons, hydrogens, oxygens, sulfurs, nitrogens, they're all still there. They haven't gone flinging off into the liquid, but they've just changed their shape. It's a conformational change, like a transformer. Hmm. So that's what isomerization means, to isomerize. It means to take a molecule, change its shape, but don't take away any of its constituents.
Ah, okay.
Right? So alpha acids can isomerize. They can change their shape if you add heat to them. Beta acids cannot isomerize because they have what amounts to a double bond, because between atoms you can have single, double, and triple bonds. And the more bonds you have, the more rigid that connection is. In the alpha acids, it's just a single bond there, that so it can kind of rotate around a single axis, right? I can think about it like Tinker Toys. You know, you just rotate your Tinker Toys around a single stick. That's what happens as this alpha acid isomerizes with heat during the boil.
Gotcha.
Is a bond breaks and allows it to do its whole swivel thing and change its conformation. But the cool thing, what happens there is that alpha acids, so let's say in their chemical names, the three most prominent alpha acids, humulones, H-U-M-U-L-O-N-E-S, those are humulone, cohumulone, and adhumulone. And the co and the ad are what we call reactive groups. So if you look this molecule up in like Wikipedia, you'll see kind of this base structure of this molecule, and then you'll see this where one of the atoms should be a carbon or hydrogen, it'll be an R listed. And that R is shorthand for reactive group, because you could plug another molecule on the end in the place of that R, and that would make it adhumulone. But if you take that away and you put a different molecule there, that would make it cohumulone. So it's like shorthand.
Okay.
So there's, and you can think of these different humulones as variations on a theme, right? The beta acids, similar to the humulones, the lupulones, beta acids, you know, they have the same thing. They have lupulone, co-lupulone, and ad-lupulone. As you take that alpha acid and you isomerize it, you change its shape. Let's say humulone, the base molecule. In its base state, in the hop cone, it's not, you can't taste it, it's not bitter. It's not. Mm-hmm. So anytime anybody comes up to you at a beer festival and puts a pellet or a cone in their mouth because they think they're cool and they chew it up and they're like, oh my God, this must be in high alpha variety. No, you're not tasting any alpha acids there. You're tasting all these other bittering components.
Do people actually do that?
Absolutely.
I mean, the eating the hop cone, yes. The drunker
they get. But, absolutely. They're like, oh my God, this must be a high alpha hop. It's so bitter. Right, beer geek. Go away, Kevin. That has nothing to do with that. You're tasting all the polyphenols and tannins and other stuff. The act of isomerization, the act of changing shape, the act of taking like this molecule and like turning it, twisting it 180 degrees, like a Rubik's Cube, takes it from tasteless to bitter. Takes it from completely insoluble in water, like oil and water. It's like it won't dissolve in water, to soluble in water, just by twisting half the molecule to point the other direction. Nothing else changed. You didn't react it with any other chemicals to create a new compound. It just changed its shape. And I think that's really cool. And there's a lot of entire field of chemistry around that idea of shape change. That's really something unique to hops. We don't see that a lot in other plant chemistry. Also, along with that conformational change comes some aspects that we happen to like in beer besides its bitterness, like bacteriostatic properties, right? It suppresses bacteria and fungal growth. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Helps the beer stay better longer, right?
Nice. Any beer is healthy.
And you know what? There are some other humulone-type chemicals in there that have incredible health benefits, and we'll get to that here in a minute. So we talked about the alpha acids. They go through this isomerization thing to become bitter. Beta acids do not do that because they can't change shape. They're kind of locked in there because they've got lots of double bonds. They can't like spin around a single axis. These other humulones, cohumulone, adhumulone, rho, iso, adhumulone, all the, it just goes on and on and on. There's 30 to 40 different subspecies of the humulone and lupulone families.
Wow.
But damn it, cohumulone has got to be the most bitter and the most harsh. And that's what I'm like, what in the hell? How did this ever become a thing? Long story short, the data that exist on which of these humulones provide the biggest kick in bitterness, when we get right down to it, the American Society of Brewing Chemists, there was a paper published, and I'll find it. Maybe we can dump it on the website, where on the bench, they made a beer and they bittered it with pure humulone, pure cohumulone, and pure adhumulone, three different treatments. And like a good experimental design, they had replicates, and you know, and these components they synthesized in a lab, which is not too difficult to do. It's not like crazy hard. But what they wanted to take out all these other factors, like the polyphenols and any sort of oxidation byproducts that also turn out can be bitter. And all these other factors, they wanted to get right to the heart of it. They're like, is there any perceived bitterness difference? And so they dosed a base beer that had not been bittered with any hops with those three chemicals and gave it to a trained taste panel, statistically valid. And guess what they found?
They found that it was not true, I'm sure.
No statistical difference.
Mm-hmm.
None. Wow. This is revolutionary. Holy hell. Everybody needs to know about this. Why doesn't everybody know about this? Because science is hard. The hop industry was built up to be talking about, well, this hop is high cohumulone, so it has a harsh bitter. I don't know where that came from, because it's interesting. If you look at hops that are high in cohumulone compared to varieties that are not, they also tend to be much higher in polyphenols, which have this astringent drying effect in your mouth. And they can produce a sensation of sharp bitterness, because as it's drying your mouth out, these polyphenols are binding with the proteins in your saliva, and they're actually precipitating out of your saliva, and it acts to dry your mouth out, like physically dry your mouth out.
Huh.
That amplifies the bittering sensation that we're getting from these alpha acids triggering a certain receptor on our tongues, in our taste buds, right? TAS-R2 just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? That's the name of it. Physiologists are not creative. And so this TAS-R2 receptor is bonding with these humulones. But the polyphenols and the act of drying out your mouth somehow is like the kicker, right? It adds a more intense experience to that sensation.
It almost sounds like, what do we call that? Multisensory the other day. There are multiple things coming into play here, and the combination is what gives us this.
Right. So now we go and look at each one of these humulones, cohumulone, adhumulone, and humulone. And we know the physiology of these bittering components attaching to receptors on our tongue, TAS-R2, and we can look at its stimulation. So we should be able to say, okay, we did this taste, this panel, and you know, whenever you get into human taste panels, it gets kind of murky, even if they're trained. So we said, well, let's just look at, literally, let's look at neuron excitement from these cells when we add these different humulones to it. And guess what they found?
I don't know.
No difference.
Are these scientists doing their job, really?
No difference.
I mean, if they keep finding, isn't that the easy answer, no difference?
Because what they found was that those, what we call those reactive groups, remember I talked about, if you look in Wikipedia, you see a little R that's tacked onto this base molecule. Mm-hmm. They said, if it's just that active component, we should be able to stimulate those TAS-R2 receptors by putting that active, just the reactive group on the tongue.
Sure.
You know, on those cells. No change.
No change.
You take humulone and you put it on the tongue or on the cell. Bam, fires. You take cohumulone, you put it on the cell. Bang, fires. But the low component didn't create a fire. Hmm. It's not the little component that's doing it. Damn it. But I think the hop industry said, well, how can I differentiate these hops between this hop and that hop and blah, blah, blah. Well, this one has a higher cohumulone level. Great. This one's also greener. Does it make your beer any different? No, but hey, it's a selling point. That's where I think that came from.
All
and they just said, right. And so when I see these trials, these new studies, quote unquote, or experiments done by brewers, even like in the MBAA, and I've heard some of that on some of their podcasts where it's like, oh, we did this study and we did this taste panel with this university. And we found that absolutely these cohumulone, blah, blah, blah. And then you read the study and you found out the way they were asking their questions were totally leading the answers. Whether they were intentionally doing that or not, I choose to believe they were not intentionally doing that.
I you know, I have a background in survey design, and I hate bad questions. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. Especially when the way you made that sound, and I think intentionally you made it sound this way, especially when those bad questions are misleading for a reason.
Exactly.
I mean, it goes back to that old, are you incompetent or are you trying to do it wrong? Because those are the only options.
Right. Right. As I tell my team in my day job, whenever you get frustrated and you get turned around, always boil things down to what is. What do we know is true? And what we know is true is what we can see from well-designed experimental studies, as well as observed chemical phenomenon like stimulation of TAS-R2 receptors and properly designed ASBC methodologies that say there's no fucking difference between any of these humulones when it comes to bitterness. Okay. So let's take that at face value. Let's say, all right, James, stop yelling at me. I'm a convert. I get it. Don't hurt me. Where is the perception of in bitterness coming from then that makes these things different? And can it be correlated to a high cohumulone variety? Ah, that's interesting. maybe nobody's looking at that. Because we could say that hop has a harsh bitter because it has a high cohumulin level. No. But the cohumulin level may be an indicator of other things.
Yeah.
So, like I said, there's other bittering components, like the polyphenols, out of which tannins and isoflavonoids and all sorts of things are in there. We call them polyphenols. Mm-hmm. That dry your mouth out, that add that kicker, that make things seem more bitter. As is happening right now as I'm drinking this ESB. The issue there is that how you brew with it, with the hop, and where you put it in the process, like in dry hopping and how long you leave it sit there, blah, 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 you can extract more or less of those polyphenols, which will impact your perception, even though your alpha acid levels are the same. And polyphenols are not something that's reported on hops, generally. Like, you get your alpha, the beta, the hop storage index, and total oils. That's all you're going to get from a general review, like a general laboratory analysis. Yeah, they could measure total polyphenol content, but it's just not something people do. And I don't know why, because it has such a massive impact on mouthfeel and overall bitterness perception. I don't get it.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So I'll put you on the spot here. Are there any varieties off the top of your head that have very similar alpha and cohumulone levels, but are vastly different in their use and it's due to the polyphenols? And any you can just think of?
In their use?
Mm-hmm.
So like a brewer would use them in different places because they know those hops have higher polyphenols?
Well, maybe they don't know why. But
oh, I see what you're saying. Well, most noble varieties tend to be very low in polyphenol concentration. Mm-hmm. They're also low in alpha and beta acids in general. So you see those kind of hops put in certain kinds of beers that are that reflect a tradition. And if you went and you put a, let's say, an American hop or a New Zealand hop in that same beer, it's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I mean, there's that aspect, but I don't know any brewer, none that I've come across, and please, if anyone is listening and they are doing this, let me know, because it's fascinating, that's actually having their hops analyzed for things like polyphenols to determine how best to use these things. Mm-hmm. I doubt it, given the fact that so many brewers are saying, well, the longer I leave my hops sit in the beer during dry hop is the better it's going to be. No, Sparky, stop it. Because we know that extraction is done even at 0 degrees Celsius. So let's just say above freezing. The extraction of dry hop and the aroma components is done in 4 days. At room temperature, it's 12 hours. The longer you leave those hops sit in there in the dry hop, you're going to be sucking out these other water-soluble components, like polyphenols, that are going to maybe give you something you don't like. Or maybe it's giving you something you do like, but you don't know why.
You don't know why. And couldn't that be the subtitle of many of our episodes?
Yeah. There's a t-shirt. So that's... Let's call alpha and polyphenols the obvious bittering compounds. But there's this other group. Well, we talked about lupulones and said, well, lupulones really don't contribute much bitterness. Mm-hmm. And what you'll read in the literature and even some brewing texts is that it's like, well, oxidative byproducts of lupulone are perceived as being bitter. So as lupulone breaks down through just oxidation, or what we call acid hydrolysis, and the molecule is attacked chemically and breaks apart, they form compounds that are called humulinones. H-U-M-U-L-I-N-O-N-E. Humulinones. And these humulinones, yes, humulinones, are water soluble.
Yeah, my note taking app is just writing a little squiggly line under that word. It does not like that at all.
Right. So the interesting thing here is that humulinones will form as oxidation byproducts of both alpha and beta acids. They are not detected during alpha acid or beta acid determinations in the lab. So it's not something that we're looking for. Whether it's you're doing it by HPLC or you're doing it by UV spectroscopy, it doesn't matter. But they're somewhere around between 60 and 70% as bitter as isomerized alpha acids. Think about this. These are oxidized alpha and beta acids. If you've got old hops or hops that have a high hop storage index that indicate that they are oxidized, we're looking at the reduction of alpha and beta acids through oxidation there. We are not looking at the increase in these humulinones through this oxidation process. So brewers are getting a hop storage index number saying, okay, well, this is what the alpha was. This is a hop storage index. I'll do my little calculation. And so I have to derate its bittering power by X percent because the alpha has disappeared. So I got to dump more in. Mm-hmm. What it's not taking into account is that those components, as they break down and they create this humulinones, that's 66% as bitter. The algorithm that you're using to calculate your loss of bitterness due to loss of alpha is not taking those into account. So you can do this straight up calculation and end up with a beer that's actually more bitter than you wanted it to be because you were not taking into account these other water-soluble bittering components. Okay. They're less bitter than the alphas, but just because you've lost, let's say, for giggles, you lost 50% of your alpha. Which, I don't know, you put those in a lambic or something. Because, damn.
Yeah. Not much left.
Isovaline. Stinky cheese. Hops. 66% of that 50%. So, let's say 2/3 of that 50% are still going to contribute to bitterness. It may not be as perceived as bitter as alpha, but it was still going to be perceived as bitter.
Okay.
The other thing you're not taking into account is the beta acids are also degraded by 50%. But you didn't consider beta acids in your bittering because, well, they don't isomerize, right? But you're going to have that same 2/3 of 50% now that have broken down from beta acids that are also bitter that you didn't account for. All of a sudden, wham, your beer is just way too bitter than what you were expecting. And what do? We blame the hops.
Of course.
Oh, the hops were old. Yes, the hops were old. You knew that going into it, right? But it's not the fact that they were old that caused a bad bittering activity. It was the fact that the calculation didn't take into account these breakdown byproducts that also happen to be bitter.
Right.
Son of a bitch. Hmm. So this is a... I'm not going to say this isn't new. We've known about these humulinones for a long time, but people have said, you know what, math is hard, and how do I figure out this component and when there's like decimal points and percentages involved?
Give people a little bit of credit.
That calculation isn't in my Mr. Brewer software package. Well, it's becoming a thing now. Mm-hmm. And the way we've gotten around that is saying if your hops are over, have a HSI of over 0.36, they're spoiled, don't use them. Granted, there's other oxidation byproducts that are happening from some of these aroma compounds that you may not want in your beer. But from a pure alpha standpoint, or a pure, let's just say pure bittering standpoint, the fact that they're oxidized may not actually be that as much of a detriment as you might think it is. And it may also be why some beers, like beers that use aged hops, use them, because the bitterness that we perceive from these humulinones tends to be what we call rounder on the tongue. So instead of being sharp and a long linger down the back of your throat that we get with high hop concentrate or high alpha concentrations, these humulinones tend to create more of an overall, it's described as rounded or softer bitterness that plays much better with some of these more delicate beer styles that have a lot of other things going on in them, like a lambic, where you've got all these contributions from bacteria and usually fruit and all kinds, you know, and other oxidative byproducts, where if you had a really sharp hop in there, it would just like plow through all those other experiences. These alpha and beta oxidation products create a more harmonious bitterness that plays well with the beer style.
Interesting. More subtle.
Totally more subtle and more refined. But our perception of its bitterness level is really not changed a whole lot compared to what we would see from an alpha, the straight up isomerized alpha product. It's just different. So this whole concept of this is bitter just doesn't cut it, because there's multiple kinds of bitter perception. There's the drying of the mouth bitter, right, from polyphenols. There's this more rounded, harmonious, smooth bitterness from these oxidative byproducts. And then there's the sharp, very much in-your-face present alpha sting from a high alpha hop. And so it's not just enough to say this hop is high alpha or this hop has a lot of cohumulin and therefore it's bitter. That doesn't cut it. Just the pure number of ways that a hop can provide bittering, let alone the number of ways a brewer can use that to enhance or detract from it, is far too many to just say these hops are bitter because of X.
But I think you hit it on the head there that it's in the power of the brewer to know how they're using it and what to look for to use it in the right way. If you're looking for sharp versus subtle, it's versus smooth, it's different based on how you're using it. But if the brewer doesn't know any better and is just going for alpha, and that's the world we live in with hop bombs, it's just loaded up.
Well, let's think about this real quick. And I did some calculations because everybody loves math on this podcast.
Oh, yes.
Can we talk about first order enzyme kinetics? We want to talk about first order enzyme kinetics?
Can we not? I mean, really?
I know. Really? Can you not?
Really?
I mean, come on. It's all I can do for 15 minutes into a cocktail party and keep from talking about
that. At least one person listening was saying, when are they going to get to this?
Finally.
It's all been leading here. Such a tease.
I know, right? So basically, we're talking about one of the most common questions I get at the Siebel Institute is, how long do I need to boil my hops to get them to isomerize? Well, that's an interesting question. It's a first order kinetic equation. What does that mean? It means the slope is linear. It means that time and temperature are linear, and there's no like hockey stick. There's no curve in this slope. It's like the longer you boil it, the more you're going to isomerize. But it's a point of diminishing returns. If you provide, assuming that your volume, your liquid volume, and the hops that you're adding are appropriate, you're fully isomerized in 15 minutes, right, at boiling temperatures. 15 minutes. And there's a lot of home brewers and other brewers thinking right now, why in the hell am I adding hops earlier than like flame out at the end of the the boil in order to get my alpha? Because there's more than just alpha isomerization going on here. The fact that you put hops in at 90 minutes to knockout is, well, why am I doing that? Why don't I add them later? Because you're doing other extractions. You've got other compounds in there that you that need exposure to that heat in order to develop their full flavor, like some of the oils, caryophyllene and humulene, absolutely need exposure to that high heat for a long period of time to force oxidation in order for them to become aromatic. And that's a whole other thing we're going to talk about in Backyard Brew Farm about first wort hopping, about why we would do that if I only need 15 to 20 minutes to do an isomerization. The fact that we see this display in every beer recipe ever made, that we're adding hops a lot earlier than 15 minutes to knock out, says through experience, but we don't know why we didn't, you know, those folks didn't know why it happened, but they were assuming that it was the contributions of alpha acid that was doing this. They had to isomerize. They got to be in there a long time. They got to be boiling in order to get this isomerization. No, we can do it in a test tube in 15 minutes and draw a nice little line. What else is coming out? So the fact that you guys and gals and brewers that are doing that, putting in early additions, speaks to the fact that there's other bittering components that you are extracting during that process that have nothing to do with alpha acid isomerization.
I mean, if you're looking for two bitter old men, you came to the right place.